Hi everyone, and welcome to this Suffolk Babies podcast episode. Today, alongside Joe and I, we have got the third member of the Suffolk Babies team, Dora, with us. Dora is one of our baby and toddler class teachers, but she's also our infant feeding specialist. Hi Dora.
Hello, hi Mel.
And today we are going to talk about breastfeeding. Instead of doing sort of the frequently asked questions, because we already do that, Dora does a 2-hour long workshop as part of our free antenatal course on breastfeeding and the introduction to breastfeeding. We're going to do more of a breastfeeding fact or fiction, like myth busting, because there's often a lot of things around breastfeeding, a lot of questions around breastfeeding, or a lot of things that are actually misunderstood to do with breastfeeding that I think it would be quite interesting for us to talk about and for our listeners to hear. So we're going to start off, Dora. The biggest thing that I found when I started feeding my first baby was this idea that both my boobs would produce the same amount of milk and therefore both would generate sort of the same ability to satisfy my baby. But actually I found, and I think this is quite common, but you can say fact or fiction, that actually I had a boob that produced a lot more milk than the other.
Absolute fact, I think. And I think it's quite a common experience for most women. Not myself, but someone else coined it as saying there was a sort of super boob and a slacker boob that most women have. And one is always slightly playing catch up with the other. This can also be led slightly by your baby. So especially with our sort of initiation of breastfeeding, when perhaps you've had a longer labour or quite a prolonged birth experience, sometimes your baby will naturally be more comfortable feeding from one side right at the beginning, and often up production on one side, simply because they might have a bit of neck stiffness or back stiffness and actually not want to be positioned on the other side. But equally though, just of our sort of our biology, our makeup, very often one breast does produce less than the other, and there's absolutely no problem with it. So we are designed to match our baby's need for nutrition, and that's all, you know, what babies do when they're feeding, when they're cluster feeding especially. They're working with our hormones to increase milk supply, and whether that whole process works a bit more efficiently on one side than the other has no bearing on your baby's ability to thrive. I think the main drawback with it is that as they grow older, and if your breastfeeding experience is sort of goes on over the months and years even, that you do, and especially in my case, end up a bit lopsided till you finish breastfeeding, because they almost completely wean themselves off one side by the time they reach sort of late baby, early toddlerhood.
But is there anything we can do about it, Dora? I think most people try and then even them up, but actually if you try and even them up, are we sort of fighting against nature? And does that mean that if we're constantly trying to get the other one up to the speed of the super boob, that then we're not enabling the super boob to produce as much as it should be, because we're then not feeding or pumping as much from that breast? Is there, or should we be trying to even them up?
I think it's really worth establishing, especially if this is an issue that you may have noticed in your sort of early experience of breastfeeding. I'm talking the first sort of days and weeks of breastfeeding. I think it's worth establishing whether it's down to your baby's neck stiffness, back stiffness, that they have got a small amount of, you know, not trauma, but something that's happened to them during either pregnancy, labour or birth that needs perhaps sorting out through a cranial osteopath, or whether it is just that they have a preferred side. If it is the fact they just have a preferred side and that they're quite happy feeding on one side and less so on the other, like you're saying, I think that is slightly fighting against nature to increase the production on the other side. With breastfeeding, you know, one of the sort of golden tips, I shy away from the word rules, but sort of tips, is that you always offer both breasts during a feed. So you let your baby feed continuously on whatever side that they're latching onto, and when they come off naturally themselves, give them a burp, offer them the other side. If they take it, great. If they don't, great. And then as a rule of thumb, start them on the other side that you finished on, or that they didn't go on at all, for the next feed. But I don't think you need to put great sort of backbreaking effort into trying to make supply completely equal. It's just not necessary.
Okay, real. We know that breastfeeding isn't an easy task, is it? It can be a bit of a tricky thing to master, can't it? But I think also we know that there's people who breastfeeding journey starts off and it's been a tricky time but does get easier. We also know that there's people who maybe start off their breastfeeding journey and actually it all goes really well. Baby latches really well. There's, you know, feeding supply is brilliant, but then in 3 or 4 months time may come up to with issues if baby starts, as they get a little bit older, might start getting more distracted, more fussy around boob, etc. So again, fact or fiction, that breastfeeding is like this linear journey, or like most things with baby, it can be sort of changeable as they get older, as things develop, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most of the support that's offered to women is in the very early days of breastfeeding when it comes to breastfeeding support, because perhaps the challenges that women face are a little bit more acute and you don't necessarily have the sort of tools to deal with it yourself. Later on down the line, just like you were saying, especially about that sort of distraction, around the time that babies are coming out of that fourth trimester bubble, where they don't seem to notice that there's anyone or anything in the world but them and their mother, suddenly feeding can become incredibly tricky. And this was something that I didn't really factor in when I was working as an infant feeding specialist midwife in a hospital, simply because we didn't see this side further down the line till I started running a clinic for, you know, with no kind of upper age limit for the babies and mothers to attend. When they come out of this fourth trimester, suddenly every kind of sensory intrusion, if it were, can put them off feeding. So you know, a car going by, light changing from the window, obvious noises, anything like that, and they can do this incredibly sort of painful suck back, pop off the breast, and then become incredibly fussy and annoyed with themselves that they're not breastfeeding again. And you know, that's just one picked at random here from what you were saying, but that one is just a matter of time. It's a matter of letting your baby mature, realize that, you know, it's a great time between sort of 3 and 4 months of neural development for your baby, and just letting them realize that, yep, life goes on, trying to make things a little bit less stimulating. And then another big thing tends to happen with feeding, well, two more. Either they start developing teeth, which can be completely non-issue for some women, and complete sort of you know, make or break with breastfeeding for others. It's really down to the individual woman and baby and breastfeeding journey, but that often links in with weaning, around 6 months weaning onto solids as well, which can create yet again a massive change into our baby's life, you know, completely nothing they've had before, and it can affect their ability to feed for, you know, again temporarily, and it can affect the way that mothers sometimes feel about breastfeeding at that time as well. But then that's more kind of society pressures as well, which is, I'm sure, another thing we'll talk about.
Really good point there, because I think it's really hard for mums with older babies to get support for breastfeeding if you're having issues, you know, like there's not as much support available at the moment, I know, through the pandemic for the early days, but it is really hard to find support when you get to that 3 to 4 month phase, and I think the 6 month phase as well, where they get so distracted. And I think it's also in our mentality at that point going, well, it should be sorted by now, you know, if you've had a tough time to begin with and it's still then, you know, you're reaching another bump in the road about that point where your baby becomes really distracted, it's really easy to think, no, the breastfeeding is not for me, with, you know, this is all just too hard, it should be done by now, I should know how to do this by now, I should have learned this skill. And but it's this constantly evolving relationship with your baby, isn't it, that's constantly changing. And I think that I definitely had a really hard time feeding one of mine because she was always so distracted because she had a toddler brother running around the whole time. And it was really difficult. And yeah, and I definitely found it hard to access the support to keep on plugging away with that baby.
I think that seed is sown that breastfeeding should be established. That seed's sown almost at the time of birth, whether you gave birth in the hospital or at home, that very often, you know, part of a checklist that midwives have around discharge, again, either your midwife's leaving your house or discharge from the hospital, is breastfeeding established? And I think it's one of the most misleading checks. And you have it on your sheets. Remember, coming home, you have your discharge notice sheets filed away for your health visitor, and it will say yes or no on it. And it's such a misleading question to have, because actually for most women, breastfeeding doesn't even begin to be sort of more established until about the 6 week mark. And then, as Jo was saying, those sort of ups and downs along the road, it's not always plain sailing from then, but that's normal. And I think the more it's acknowledged by healthcare professionals, but also by women talking to each other, is, you know, break down these barriers of thinking, right, it has to be sorted and done and dusted. It's either I'm breastfeeding and it's fine past a certain amount of time, or I'm not, it didn't work out. And actually there can be issues that you can chat through with other women in similar situations pretty much throughout your breastfeeding journey.
I think it's like that with all of parenthood though, isn't it? We've got this mentality of, you're like, breastfeeding, tick.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Sleep, tick. And, you know, it's like the whole thing, every single landmark or anything to do with a baby or parenting in general, you're like, I can remember as well going, oh, it'll be so much easier when, you know, they're weaned. It'll be so much easier when they're feeding themselves. It'll be so much easier when they can go to the loo without me. You know, it'll be so much easier when they're potty trained. And there's never an end to any of these. It's just different things that you're dealing with the whole time. We have to stop thinking, oh, you know, have I done this now? Am I done on it? Have I got it all sorted?
And I think things become taboo. I think, you know, what you were saying about sort of, you know, the tick box, I think sleep becomes really taboo after a certain amount of time. We can all sort of commiserate that our babies don't sleep in the first few months, and then ones like mine that continue not to sleep past then, you have to just go, yep, it's all sorted. Otherwise it seems like a reflection on you that something you're doing isn't right, which just isn't the case in terms of sleep, breastfeeding, motherhood in general.
Yeah, and you're right, you know, these little blips or bumps in the road of that breastfeeding journey, when we think that we won't experience them, do lead for a lot of people to finish breastfeeding way before they are ready to, and it can lead to some, you know, really deep emotional disappointment. I think certainly for me, I had that with my first as well. He got his first teeth not till 9 months, so he was quite late in getting his teeth, but he got his first teeth and started to nip me. But not now I look back and I think actually it wasn't really that hard, but it was such a shock to me in the beginning, and because I didn't know, as a first-time mum, I didn't know what to expect, etc. I thought, well, this is how it's going to be from now on, and I can't keep feeding him if he's going to keep biting me. So I finished our breastfeeding journey, and I look back now with real sadness, because I'm now feeding our second and he is 15 months, and yes, we went through the same thing as he was getting used to his having his teeth, but it didn't last for very long at all. And now we're still feeding, and I love feeding him, and I enjoy it, and I wish that I had carried on, or I wish someone had told me, don't worry, it will get better, and that, you know, you'll both learn to how to feed with teeth, and then it won't be an issue anymore. But no one did tell me, and I felt really disappointed about that. So I wanted that to be something that we did talk about in this podcast, because I think it's a really important thing to mention.
I think it's incredibly important, and it's really sad that that was your experience. I think also part of that feeds into the UK rates of breastfeeding, that as a nation, we're just not used to giving advice that probably would have been passed down from family member to family member on these kind of later on breastfeeding issues, because the rates of breastfeeding tend to drop off quite steeply in the early weeks. Teeth, you know, that it's so down to the individual. So, you know, with my first, for example, I don't think he ever bit me, and, you know, he breastfed for about a year and a half, and now I've got a 2.5-year-old who has been a bit nippy here and there. And it's good to know through chatting to other women that, yep, this can happen sometimes. And like you were saying, it doesn't last very long at all. It can be a massive, you know, any kind of fear about our nipples getting hurt is a massive influence on breastfeeding. So I think it can be a bit of a sort of dark spectre looming in the future, in the beginning of your breastfeeding experience. But, you know, it doesn't last, as you found with your second boy. It doesn't last. And very often, you know, we're so used to being absolutely sort of perfect mothers with our babies, or trying at least, that it doesn't come naturally when you sometimes go, oh, and suddenly, and, you know, just a bit of a shock noise, which isn't contrived at all, but it's enough to make them come off, look at you. Yeah. And I felt awful the first time my youngest did it, that I'd actually, you know, it was, I probably didn't sound quite as nice as that. I probably roared and he started crying and I felt absolutely awful, but he didn't do it again for a very long time. And I thought, right, I'm not telling you off, I promise. It was just that absolute shock. Yeah. And they do work around it. Milk teeth are called milk teeth because they are designed to breastfeed with. And that's what globally many babies and children are breastfeeding up to the point that their milk teeth fall out and then their adult teeth come in, and they are able to effectively breastfeed without causing trauma to the breasts up until the time that their milk teeth fall.
And, you know, while we're on that subject, let's talk about the length of time you should or can breastfeed your baby for, and that is entirely up to you, isn't it, actually?
Completely. I think however long you breastfeed your baby, be it that you gave them colostrum at the beginning and then felt it wasn't for you or things didn't work out, or you're feeding your baby way into toddlerhood and early childhood, whatever you're doing, celebrate it. Absolutely celebrate it and know that you've done the best for you as a family. You know, breastfeeding isn't a singular sort of thing, you know, we're talking tick boxes. It's got to be a holistic thing that works for you as much as it works for your baby and works for your family as a whole. So if you found your original goal, I know lots of women set themselves sort of breastfeeding goals, was to give your baby colostrum, and you did, and then you thought, right, that's done, fantastic, celebrate it. If you wanted to get to the point of 6 weeks or 6 months, again, celebrate it. There are brilliant benefits of breastfeeding from birth, and you know, the amazing immunity boost that colostrum gives, all the way up to feeding a young child and a toddler. Breast milk is a living fluid and it constantly adapts to your baby or child's needs. So if you do continue breastfeeding, unfortunately, and I think hopefully barriers are getting somewhat broken down now, although I might be living in a bit of an optimistic bubble, after a certain amount of time, people have fixed ideas on how long you should breastfeed for. And just with so much of motherhood, you just have to be your own and your baby's advocate and just say, that's fine, you can have those ideas, those preconceived ideas. I know that if I am breastfeeding for a longer time than perhaps family members or friends deem acceptable or right, you've got the science to back you up, saying that my breast milk is going to adapt and change to suit my older baby or toddler throughout the whole of our breastfeeding journey. Looking at sort of coughs and colds, and of course the big one right now, COVID-19, there's multiple studies that now show that COVID-19 antibodies are found in breast milk, and that of course is going to be an element of protection for our young babies, but also that's going to be an element of protection for our older babies. And I know there's lots of information out there at the moment saying if you are breastfeeding and you want to continue, great thing that you do, simply because of the pandemic there's always benefits. And I know I'm sort of rambling on a bit, but on the subject of this as well, the idea that over a certain time you're just doing it for yourself. And this really gets me, because first of all, of course, you're not just doing it for yourself, but also what is wrong with a mother being happy breastfeeding? If it brings happiness to you and your child, you know, what's the problem with carrying on? And sometimes, you know, if you've got a wriggly baby and you just want to sit down for 10 minutes and watch The Chase with a biscuit, you can put a baby onto the breast and go, right, sorted. I don't have to, you know, you're taken care of. I can relax for a bit. And that's fine. That doesn't mean you're a selfish mother or you're doing it for your own needs. You're just doing what works for you as a family and what women have done for centuries, for time ever.
I find that all the time, even now with Theo, who is 15 months. If I were to follow the you know, supposed society norms, he could have fed an hour ago and I would go, well, no, you don't need any more milk or boob because you've just had it. But actually, he's going, oh, boob, boob. And I'm thinking, I just want some peace. So it's fine. I've got nothing else to do. I'll pop you on. I have 10 minutes peace. I don't see any problem with it. But actually, you're right. That can be seen as a bit of kind of going against the grain, can't it? Is that what we should or shouldn't be doing? But there are no real rules, are there? You kind of have to do what's right for you.
There's none at all. And any of these sort of rules that are there have been imposed often on incorrect advice or very outdated advice. And, you know, you just do what's right for you. Like we were saying a moment ago about however long someone breastfeeds for, celebrate it and know that it was right for you and your baby. And if your breastfeeding journey ended before you wanted to, get some support with that, talk to someone. You know, all three of us, me, Joe and Mel, we've all breastfed. You can always talk to us about it if your breastfeeding journey is finished and you're having a few sort of, you know, doubts or looking back and not quite happy. We'd all happily talk to you about it, because it is an incredibly emotive subject, and it's so driven by society. Even if we think we're not immune to, even if we think we are immune to that, I don't think any of us are.
No, definitely. This leads nicely onto another kind of myth, fact or fiction, and that is all about, you know, if you're building bad habits, if you feed to sleep, for example, how that's going to affect your baby in the long term, if it's going to create problems for you, etc. So let's just set that record straight as well. Will it create problems if you feed to sleep, or, you know, offer the breast whenever they want it, or are giving you the cues, or you feel like you want to give it to them?
Absolutely not. Complete myth. And it's really well backed up and documented by an organisation called UNICEF Baby Friendly, which is aiming to increase breastfeeding rates around the world and normalise breastfeeding around the world. And there's, if anyone's interested, to Google UNICEF Baby Friendly Building a Happy Baby, and there are countless campaigns around medical centres. This isn't sort of some left of field parenting thing, it's really campaigned everywhere within NHS hospitals, GP surgeries, etc., with posters of saying feed your baby when they're showing feeding cues, feed to sleep if you want to. It's all about building a happy baby and making sure your baby knows that their needs are being met at all times. And somewhere something went wrong along the path, that this was kind of interpreted as becoming an absolute slave to your baby and turning them into these sort of greedy little monsters that would be spoiled and wouldn't be self-sufficient. Whereas there's a wealth of scientific knowledge to back up the fact that is that by feeding them when they're hungry, feeding them to sleep, holding them, cuddling them, and making them, you know, happy, is going to build a very confident, independent little toddler down the line, who knows who their primary caregivers are. It's no kind of extended feeding or feeding to sleep or anything like that is habit forming, and nor is it detrimental to your baby at all, quite the opposite.
And Joe, I think that also relates to what we constantly talk about, doesn't it, in terms of responsiveness and attachment.
It absolutely does. All of these things that we're talking about, like this idea that feeding ought to be done on a schedule, or, you know, we're like, and all this really strict routine based, you know, well, routines that are based on clocks. You know, this, there's a time for this and there's a time for that. It's what we call scientific parenting. And it became like really, really popular in the 1900s, the 1930s. And it was one of the big driving factors behind women, you know, choosing to bottle feed over breastfeeding. And the main root behind that was because actually it meant that you could, you know, it boosted fertility rates in Britain at the time, which is what the public health, you know, were trying to encourage. So in fact, all of this baby advice doesn't come out of what's right for your baby or what your baby needs at all. It's because of a government policy that was designed to really boost the UK birth rate after the First World War. So, you know, it's kind of like, that's what we have to remember. So, and we're still affected by this today. You know, and it's wrong. And we know from all of the information that Dina Dora is talking about and all of the clinical research that we have now, that actually clock based routines are not a good thing. You know, feeding your baby on demand should absolutely come first. And it's in being responsive and following those cues and going with what your baby tells you is absolutely paramount. That's the most important thing. The other big myth is that, you know, if you don't stretch out your feeds during the day, you know, and have them feeding 4 hourly during the day, they're not going to sleep as well overnight. And when you're in that sleep deprived state, you know, you will try anything, won't you? I've done some crazy stuff to try and get a baby to sleep for longer, I can tell you. But I can also absolutely reassure you that it makes no difference whatsoever, you know, how you feed your baby. Totally unrelated to how they sleep. So, and I've obviously seen thousands of babies over the years. I've survived 3 newborns myself. Yeah. And whether they are, you know, breastfed, bottle fed, feeds are spaced out, feeds are close together, however you're feeding them, has absolutely no effect on how they sleep overnight.
And I think we also need to remember that breastfed babies don't always just want the breast for milk, do they? It is, for many, a real source of comfort as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a massive source of comfort and it's designed to be so. It's going back a moment to what we were saying about sleep as well, is that babies will wake in the night and often want that contact from their mothers straight away, and the suck reflex is incredibly comforting to them. And there's nothing wrong with a baby breastfeeding for comfort. It's as important as feeding for nutrition, and very often those two lines will be completely blurred anyway, and there's no sense in trying to work out what it's for, because it's all as important as each other. On the subject of sleep as well, I think babies, the reason that babies do wake up in the night, for many reasons, but a big reason surrounding feeding and breastfeeding especially, is to do with our hormones and our hormone regulation during day and night. Babies are absolutely designed to wake through the night and feed, to gain weight, to thrive, and to fill those tiny tummies that empty so quickly. So, you know, that very well-known fact about babies' stomachs when they're born being marble-sized and then slowly growing to the size of a walnut over a few days, they don't get massively bigger than that for a while. And a baby's digestive system is very different to an adult. They don't hold on to milk in their stomach for a very long time. They digest it very quickly, unlike us, and need little and often. And little and often, whether you're breastfeeding or bottle feeding or combi feeding, is the key to a really successful feeding experience. The hormone that is responsible sort of for stock control in our breasts, which basically when milk leaves the breast via pumping or feeding, it's a bit like a can of beans being taken off the shelf in a supermarket. You get that sort of stock control saying, right, that needs replacing. And that's responsible for building your milk supply. It's what the hormone that goes absolutely crazy when your baby's cluster feeding. But this hormone, prolactin, also soars roughly between the hours of 2 to 6 a.m. in the morning, which I think is a horrendously cruel trick of Mother Nature, but it is as it is. So babies often, even as your baby starts showing you a pattern, you're not imposing a routine on them, but as the weeks or months go by, many babies start off an evening by having a huge cluster feed, falling asleep till somewhere in the middle of the night, waking maybe once or twice with quite a good gap in between. And then, as many women say, it's absolutely wild card from about 2 or 5 a.m. what will happen. And if you're not co-sleeping already, it tends to be the time that most babies then join their mothers in bed and just kind of snack. And what they're doing, they're looking after that stock control, they're protecting their food by responding to this great sore in the hormone prolactin by making sure that they are building and building that milk supply. So it's rough, you know, I really feel for everyone, because it is just the worst time in 24 hours that could have been chosen for this to happen. But it's really important that we respond to our baby's needs for all the reasons we were saying, but also for our own sort of stock control of our breast milk as well.
And I think it's really helpful to know that, because then you know why it might be happening. You know why your baby is likely to be waking up between, you know, in those early hours to feed, because you have got more milk. You are producing more milk at that point in time. You're right, it is cruel. And I do remember learning this with my first and thinking, right, well, then I know what I've got to do. If he doesn't wake up, I've got to pump between 2 and 5. And that's what I did. And they can be very strange, lonely hours, can't they? But actually just having that knowledge that that's when my milk supply was going to be at its best. And therefore, if I could help boost that milk supply, then I did it. I woke up, you know, if he hadn't woken up, I woke myself up and I pumped, because it enabled me to reduce my stress levels about whether I was going to produce enough. Because if I pumped at that time in the morning and he didn't want a feed, then I knew I had some in reserve to give to him at a later date.
Just cutting in, but Mel, that is such a male thing to do. That is such a male tactic in life in general. So having known you for so many years now, I just that absolutely cracks me up, because it's like, right, okay, I've got the science, I'm putting a plan into action, I shall execute this, and therefore I shall resolve my anxiety. And utter respect though, for getting that information and putting it into operation.
In my head I was like, well, he's either going to wake up or he isn't, and I might as well get used to being awake at that time anyway, because chances are 50% of the time he's going to be awake anyway. So, but it worked for me, and that's again, isn't it? You have to do what works for you to reduce your anxiety about all the different things that happen when you have a baby. But in terms of this sort of talking about milk production, etc., I think one also source of anxiety for many new parents is this idea of how long you need to feed for, how much they'll get in a certain set period of time. But the thing is, we also know that not one size fits all with people with breastfeeding, does it? Like, it's totally different for everyone, and every baby is different too. So I think we need to, again, dispel this myth that there's a certain amount of time you should be feeding for in order for your baby to get the amount that it needs, because just not true, is it, Dora?
Absolutely. I think it's another really common myth, and of course it comes back from a time a few generations before us where babies were expected to feed for a strict 20 minutes on each side, as if they were little robots and as if all little babies would act the same, whereas we know that they're little humans, and sometimes that gets lost.
But it's not even that long ago, Dora. When I had my first, you know, sort of, who's 17, that was very much what I was told I should do. And, you know, 20 minutes on each side, 4 hours in between, and that's where it should be. And if you're feeding more frequently than that, it's probably not getting enough. So you're probably not producing enough milk. Mm. And, yeah, and it's just, you know, that was the kind of, and information supplied by midwives as well, you know.
It's not just a great way to tear down new mothers, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that, you know, you really have to, I can remember almost like trying to convince myself it'd be longer than 2.5 hours just go for it. So, and I think that whilst we hope that people aren't given that information today, I think a lot of people still are. So the key thing I think to remember is that there's no right time. Some babies do only feed for 10 minutes, don't they?
Oh, completely.
Frequent feeding is absolutely fine.
Yeah, absolutely fine. Absolutely. And there's a massive range of what we consider normal, and common sense plays a massive part in this range. So the advice that should be given to new mothers nowadays is a feed should last anywhere between 5 minutes up to about 40 minutes. But as we said before, babies are little humans. They're going to have their own time. They're on their own schedule. Some babies are going to be more efficient than others. Some are going to want the comfort from that sup reflex more than others. Some are going to be wanting to get on and see the world. It's driven by personality as well. But if you've got the main thing, forget about times, I think is the best advice I could say, and look at the sucking rhythm. If you've got strong rhythmic sucking for the time that they're feeding, then as long as it's over 5 minutes, you're good. If you haven't got that strong rhythmic sucking with pauses, then speak to someone that can give you a bit of help with breastfeeding supports and just get some checks. But otherwise, they go for different times throughout the day and throughout the night. It's fine.
Yeah, and we stress so much about quantities with breastfeeding too, don't we? Because it's really difficult to gauge how much they've had, and so you're always sitting there going, oh, have they had enough? How much have they had? How can I measure it? But actually, again, just need to sort of go with the flow and know that there are the key areas that we need to monitor in terms of wet nappies, dirty nappies, weight gain, etc. But as long as you're hitting key sort of milestones that's right for your baby, we need to stop panicking so much about the quantity that they're actually getting from us, don't we?
It's a massive leap of faith, I think, for women in this day and age to trust their bodies. It's a bit like going through pregnancy and birth as well, that there's so much unseen, and trusting your bodies instead of trusting measurements and apps and signs. Like you were saying about nappies, I think that's the best way. Looking at lots of urine output, poos that aren't sort of too hard, you know, they can be pretty runny, pretty soft, and plenty of them. And that's really it. You know, there's no way to measure breast milk, and really there shouldn't be. Your body knows what to do. And if you're allowing unrestricted access to the breast, it's very, very rare that there'll be an issue.
What about, Dora, with weaning? Because I know, again, this is another thing that often people get quite het up about and don't quite know how to sort of juggle the two. When you start to wean, how much milk babies then need, how many feeds they should be having, etc.
It's entirely baby led again. So some babies actually get hungrier at the start of weaning because they'll have quite a few different solids, which, you know, it's a whole new experience for their digestive system. It might sit in their digestive system a bit longer than breast milk, And then in the night, it's very often very common for babies to feed really, really loads in the night around the time that you're weaning them onto solids. And again, that's fine. They're filling up on what's essentially the most nutritious and the most calorific part of their diet until they're one. You don't need to monitor their breast milk intake. You just need to be responsive to your baby's needs, just like you have been for the first 6 months without food. And just keep in mind that, as I said, the main nutrition for your baby up until 1 year is going to be your breast milk.
I fear we could talk for ages and ages because it's such an interesting topic, isn't it? And it's just such an amazing thing that our bodies can do. But there is one thing I want to finish on because I think it is a real source of confusion for people. And it's this idea of the foremilk and the hind milk and how we get to it, or whether it exists or doesn't exist. So Dora, could you just sort of demystify that for us as well?
Oh yeah, this is, I'll try and keep it concise. It's quite a sort of tricky one because although the myth of foremilk and hindmilk has somewhat been debunked, there's still the absolute truth in there, and there's more than a grain of truth in it, that the beginning of a breastfeed is very much the thirst quenching milk. The fat content is lower. I think the reason that we've tried to steer away from the idea of fore and hind milk now is the idea that there almost seem to be two separate milk chambers in the breast, and one was full of water and wasn't nutritious and almost discarded, and the other was like this golden hind milk that you just had to find your way to. In reality, both are as important as each other, because breastfeeding is everything to your baby. It's a sip of water in the middle of the day. It's a thirst quencher on a hot day. And it is a three-course meal where they're absolutely stripping the fat content from your milk ducts. And once again, as with everything, it's down to your baby. They are the best people to indicate exactly to get what they need when they need it. So if your baby does have a thirst quenching 5 minute feed, don't discount it as, oh, that's not enough. Yes, what they took will probably be somewhat low in fat content. That's what they need it. They're very good at regulating themselves. And as long as you're getting a range of times throughout the day that they feed, so some 5 minute feeds, some 20 minute feeds, whatever is normal for your baby, they will take the hind milk, or you know what we used to call the hind milk, when they need it. Right at the end of a feed, when many women have been told, unfortunately, oh, your baby's playing at the breast, or they're just sleeping at the breast, when they do that very almost of vibrating their bottom jaw, and that's very sort of juddery movement, in times gone by, sadly, that's when you'd be told, right, your baby's just playing, take them off. That kind of vibrating motion with their jaw is actually stripping the milk ducts of that, those really sort of solid fat molecules that cling to the side of the milk duct, and they're literally sort of vibrating it out. So once again, it all boils down to letting your baby feed as long as they want to, and not taking them off at this point, and knowing that no, they're not playing at the breast, they're actually working really hard at the end of a feed to absolutely get everything that they want from that feed at that time.
There has been many a night where I've sat there with Theo on my boob thinking, you're not doing anything, what's happening? And then all of a sudden he'll start going again. And many times I've thought, oh, I'm just going to take you off because I want to go to sleep. But then I'll give it often another 10 minutes and he will actually come off himself. He's asleep, but he's finished, he's had enough, and then he just wants to come off and go to sleep. And again, it's all about kind of knowing, trusting your body, and also trusting your baby that they will take what they need when they need it, and then they will finish on their own.
Yeah, I think that absolutely puts it in a nutshell, what I was saying, that trust your baby, trust your body. I think those are the most two key elements of breastfeeding.
Thank you, Dora. Thank you, Jo. As I said, we've talked about this for ages. I think we might have to do another one at some point. But we just want to reiterate, obviously, however you decide to feed your baby is absolutely right and fine. You have to do what's right for you and your baby and your family. But if you are breastfeeding, if you're hoping to breastfeed, or if you're planning on breastfeeding, then we hope that this podcast has been interesting, informative, and a little bit insightful as well. So do get in touch if you have any questions. As Dora said, all three of us are here to help you. But thank you very much for listening, and we look forward to speaking to you all again very soon.